we've heard it before from him, but he had that, talk about a piece of overreaction from a biased co-commentator.
I assumed he caught it with the top of his foot and rolled it through his own legs. That was the only thing I could think of that he must have done. But no, he tried to take a good touch and fucked it up.
Hi guys, Jack Grealish here. Delighted to say that I've signed a new deal with Aston Villa. So I left while you were sleeping.
That's all it took. A dangerous, dangerous ball went in over the top of the Liverpool defence, and for a split second, Aston Villa were through. And then Ross Barkley comes along with that big head of his and gets rid. Brilliant clearance, decisive clearance. Liverpool were spared because of Ross Barkley's action. Moments later, Ollie Watkins plays Ross Barkley through, who very coolly just takes the sting out of the situation. It looked perilous for Liverpool, but Barkley stops the ball dead. He ushers Ramsey out of the way. He allows Fabinho and Oblak to get in front of him. And the danger is gone. Liverpool are yet again safe. And seconds later, they go down the other side of the pitch and Trent Alexander-Arnold rattles the ball into the net. Liverpool win because Ross Barkley made the right choice at the other end of the pitch. I was going to save Ross Barkley for the Ulek Lemwelen take a 90th minute penalty award later on, but I've got loads for that, Liam. I'm sure you're expecting that. So let's get into Ross Barkley now. Why is Ross Barkley coming on? How much more evidence does Dean Smith need? I honestly don't know how big a sample size is going to eventually make him decide that's enough. We now know, we can now say with certainty that this isn't going to work. And it's just compounded because, well, yet again, Ross Barkley is so bad, but we also expect that. And he comes on at the expense of Ramsey, who doesn't come on until the last 10 minutes. And Keenan Davis, who changed the match against Fulham, doesn't get a look in for the whole game. People were sort of half hoping he would start. Now, we all probably knew that wasn't going to happen. They wouldn't go too up top against Liverpool. Not to start with, anyway. But by bringing Ross Barkley on, he just eliminated that decision. Davis gets nothing, having been so good in the last match. And there's one piece of evidence where one player is so good and so confident, and he can change the game. And again, how much more evidence do we need of Barkley not going to work? And that's the one he goes for. And that's the one, on top of other things, of course, but that's the one which costs the match.
Yeah, it's not like me to call back to moments that prove that I was right, but I told you to grow up last week. I mean, that was a particularly bad shout to bring Barkley on the left wing from you, but tonight's decision to bring him on, or this afternoon's decision to bring him on, was just absolutely gobsmacking. You're right to mention Keenan Davis, because the idea here, I'm sure, was that he didn't want to go to attack, and he didn't want to take off his defensive midfielder for a forward when he was drawn 1-1 away to the champions. But Keenan Davis on doesn't lose you anything in defence whenever the other option is Ross Barkley apparently playing in midfield.
Yeah.
I mean, you've jumped into his fifth and sixth touches after he came on there. Let's just go through his first three. His first touch was a miscontrolled volley from a throw-in straight to a Liverpool player to send them on a counter-attack. The next one, he played a first-time volley through ball that the commentator claimed was lovely. And there were elements of it that were nice, but let's be honest, it was overhit and a wasted opportunity. Yeah. He played him too wide. The next thing that Ross Barkley did in that match was he volleyed the ball off himself back into our box. He volleyed it off himself. Fuck off. Go home. And I mean go back to fucking London.
I still remember one time when I was 15 playing football at lunchtime in school on a gravel pitch. And the embarrassment I was facing my own goals. It was in the other team's half. And I tried to hook the ball over my left shoulder, sort of, you know, a diagonal cross-field ball sort of into the far corner. And I hit it off my own hand. And everybody was pissing themselves laughing, you know, because I was just trying this massive hooked clearance, you know, because somebody was up my arse and hit off my own hand. And I was sort of looking to see where the ball was going. But by that stage, it had gone the other direction. And I still remember the embarrassment of that. Ross Barkley is doing that in a Premier League match that you're drawn with the champions in at the edge of his own box. He, like, honestly, he tried his very best to bring Liverpool back into that game. And you've mentioned some of those chances. What about then the chances that he actually had? The shot, the left-footed shot was as tame as a Firmino shot. That's how bad that was. And like those ones he's played through, he was through on goal. The one McGinn just chipped a lovely little ball over the top of everyone. And Barkley didn't even think about taking it down his chest. There was nobody behind him. He was in behind. And he heads it back 20 metres. He found a Villa player, but there was, you know, the danger was over then. And then he gives the ball away again later on and he starts screaming. You can hear him screaming because he realised that he's ballsed up. And it's like, we've seen him do that. And he knows he's going to do that now as well. He's a broken player and he's just not a good player anymore. And the fact that he got brought on for Davis, I think, no, not for Davis, but he ruled out being able to bring on Davis. And like you say, you weren't going to get anything from him anyway in a defensive output because Ramsey was involved in that ball, like that one that ended up leading to the Liverpool goal. Like Ramsey and Barkley sort of got their wires crossed, looked at each other. Barkley didn't do anything in the end. Ramsey was the one then trying to close down Trent. He was a bit slow closing him down. But then you just look at the replay and Barkley is drifting in the picture, watching all this unfold yet again, like he always does.
I saw Watkin drum past him three times in a defensive situation as well. It's unforgivable stuff. And the first touch he takes from that throw-in, after he fucks that up, he jumps into the air as if to say, oh no, it's not oh no, get back, Ross, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And you're talking about feeling embarrassed when you volleyed the ball off your own hand. Imagine how embarrassed you should be if you're on 80 grand a week. If you're a player that people talked about being the key signing of the summer. People talked about this as the greatest signing of the summer. It's been an absolute fucking disaster.
And actually, pretty much like Aston Villa's 2021. The best thing about Villa's 2021 was the under-23s playing against Liverpool and losing 4-1. Like that's been the best bright spark of this year for Villa. And it's interesting because yet again I'm seeing like I haven't even been on Twitter because that would just annoy me, but like I'm hearing the hope in Carragher's voice, I'm hearing the analysis in the studio, and how many teams are going to get fooled into thinking that they're back because they've beaten Aston Villa? this is Groundhog Day. I'm saying this over and over, but all these teams who have gotten results against Villa over the last few months have not built on it because they've just played a really shit team in the middle of a bad run of form. And that game today was two terrible teams who didn't want to do anything with the ball, and Villa were just worse than Liverpool.
Yeah, they actually called that out at the start of the game as well, where they said Jose Mourinho's Spurs rectified their European disaster by playing Aston Villa. Yeah. Will Liverpool do the same? The Spurs were fucking dreadful. Liverpool were shite tonight as well. How many clear-cut chances did Liverpool have? Like, if Liverpool aren't beating that Aston Villa team, a team that decided to not play a midfield and then played a negative midfield by bringing on Ross Barkley, like, come on. Like, they're not back. They've got a lot more to do. At the end of the game, Kelly Cates is saying, oh, this might tee them up really well for the Real Madrid game. And what world is that in the same playing field as playing Real Madrid? Christ almighty, this isn't preparing them for anything.
Yeah, let's talk about the offside. I know there are frustrations with VAR, right? And, you know, if I was a Villa fan there, you wouldn't feel hard done by it, but you'd be really annoyed. Like, I get why people are disappointed that that's given as offside, but this is as objective as it can get. Like, I feel less sympathy with VAR decisions. We've had our complaints with VAR, everybody has. But when it's offside, like, you know, we're deciding somewhere where the point is that a player is offside or not. And again, you might disagree where that point should be. You might say the technology is unreliable. And like, you know, I understand that we don't trust the lines being drawn by a human, but either way, somebody is taking a guess at whether or not this is offside. When it's a tight call like that, it's going to be up for debate. No matter what, and this is the most accurate way of guessing, essentially. Like, you know, other than that, was it coming down to a linesman deciding? Like, I think, honestly, I'm not just saying this because I'm a Villa supporter. You have to look at that and realise, even if you're a Liverpool fan, you have to realise that Villa would be equally as pissed off if that wasn't given as offside, because the rule's supposed to be if you're offside, you're offside. Again, I get that it's tight, so nobody's going to be happy in this situation, or there's going to be one team upset because it's so tight. But we have to decide where it is. And for Villa, they would feel rightly so pissed off if we said, ah, you know, that's tight, let's just leave it. If it's offside or not, like, you can change the lines if you want, but this is the best way of doing it. And I think the fact that people are happy to say it's not offside if Cash touches it. You know, Carragher was like, because he's tried to play it, it shouldn't be offside. If that satisfies you that now rules out the rule, then it only shows that that VAR is only really annoying when it goes against your team, when it goes against what we want. Well, we're all guilty of it. We definitely are. But I think with offside, I have less sympathy with the complaints about it. It's as close as we can get to saying, no, like, we're going to make it black and white. I know you can't make it black and white, but we're trying to do that, and this is way better than somebody standing at the side of the pitch.
I don't know if it is. Jamie Carragher said we all know what offside is. We don't need VAR, Conor. But, like, coming back to the partisanship that falls into it, I'm going to sound like a partisan idiot here, but the Trezeguet penalty appeal, it's definitely a penalty. Trent is pushing into and leaning on someone that's trying to run past him, and then he slides and takes his foot. It's a penalty. And the only thing more confusing to me than the fact that it wasn't given was the fact that nobody cared. The players didn't appeal and the commentators didn't care. We had to listen to Jamie Carragher spending 15 minutes complaining about an offside call being given as offside. And then when his team and his golden boy give away a penalty, he didn't even talk about it. He's trying to figure out how Trezeguet got injured because he was fouled, Jamie. Fouled by a Liverpool player in the Liverpool box. I mean, Sky have got to get out of this pathetic routine of giving Jamie Carragher Liverpool matches and Gary Neville United matches.
Yeah.
I mean, earlier in the season, we had to put up with Gary Neville giggling like a child when Bruno Fernandes was given a penalty for trying to break Konsa's leg. Like, it doesn't add to the game having cheerleaders in the commentary box. Stop it.
The fact that Trent Alexander-Arnold has just whipped in a glorious finish in the 91st minute for Liverpool to win their first game at Anfield in, what, 8 matches? And Carragher, who I love for the most part, his first piece of analysis on it is, are you watching Gary Neville? I thought that was the moment where this has gone too far. Like, you know, that's just a great piece of play, a big moment in Liverpool's season, very important moment. And all that matters to him is that argument he was having with Gary Neville a couple of weeks ago. You know, it was just like, we're indulging ourselves now when it's getting to this Liverpool v United thing. And you're right, Sky are only helping them do that.
Well, like, they've disappeared up their own arses, the pair of them. I mean, they're not the story. They're there to make the actual story, which is the football that's happened on the pitch, more interesting by shining some light on it, by bringing all their expertise and experience, by giving us a little insight that we can't see because we don't have 50 different camera angles. Their job isn't to have a laugh and try and get a rise out of each other on Twitter.
And it seems like an awful lot of the time, that's all they're thinking about, what's happening on Twitter right now and what will people say. Like that could potentially be, and I'm not overblown it, like, you know, if Liverpool go on, like, I'm not saying that this result will spark that, but if they do go on to reach top four, you know, like, that's a big moment in that season. That's potentially an iconic moment of this season. Imagine that being played as the iconic highlights of the season. Are you watching Gary Neville? Like, that, how quickly will that age? Because all it is just a petty, mostly a bit of fun between those two. Like, it's like, you grow up. Like, just fair enough. Like, that. Like, I'm gripped watching those two arguing, and it's actually a good discussion about Trent Alexander-Arnold. We've had the discussion ourselves, but move on. Like, there's other things happening now, and he's just whipped in a glorious finish. Just talk about that.
Yeah, the argument was on Monday night. The goal was scored 2 seconds ago. What do you want to talk about? The fucking argument a week ago, or the screamer that just went into the net?
But I think the bottom line on the VAR offside decision is that Roberto Firmino strike was so bad that it did not deserve a goal. Like, It was a bad decision. He tried to drill it where there were four or five bodies in his way across the goals into the left-hand side as he was facing it. And he hits it so badly that it comes off the outside of his boot and just pops up into the right side of the net, high into it. And, like, I've never seen a ball stricken as terribly as that. And because of that, no goal.
Yeah. I have absolutely no idea how he did it. You couldn't strike a ball worse and get a better result out of it. It was incredible.
And just finally, the Salah goal. Players just cantering through. I thought the Salah goal summed up Villa today. Even though they went ahead, and because of that, you can sometimes forget how ineffective they've been largely. But, and this made me frustrated at Dean Smith as well. We'll talk a bit more about him and some of the decisions later, but like, the only reason Villa weren't three down by the time Salah scored was because they were playing Liverpool at Anfield. Like, all those mistakes, like Bertrand Traore and Trezeguet, genuinely I think it was two of the worst performances of the season, and we've been tough on El Ghazi, but I was there tonight thinking, bring on El Ghazi. You know, like, these, like, Mings teeing up Salah should be a goal, should be a definite goal. Mane going through at the end should be a goal. Bertrand Traore just trying another one of those classic volleys across the pitch should be a goal. There were so many incidents where Villa were just gifting it to Liverpool, and it was mostly, it felt like Traore and Trezeguet giving them all the momentum. Like, Trezeguet tried one, a little flick back to Douglas Luiz on the left wing, which completely left Villa wide open because it didn't even come close to coming off. And once again, Liverpool streamed down the pitch and had another big chance. And that just summed up Villa. And I thought the Salah goal was just, it was coming so far down the tracks and Villa did nothing to rectify it.
Yeah, you're right. The only reason Liverpool could win that game, because they were really sloppy and they were there for the taking, and I'm surprised that our approach to the game was so passive to begin with, because Liverpool were bad. They were misplacing passes like you wouldn't believe, and luckily they were playing against Dougie and Nakamba. I mean, for someone who is so dreadful on the ball, Nakamba has to be impeccable in defence to be a Premier League centre midfielder. But I wouldn't even say he's good, never mind impeccable. And the very minimum I would expect is that he would see, react to, and track a fullback's underlap. I mean, Robertson gets in behind him far too easily, and Nakamba's reaction is dreadful. I mean, we could all see it developing. Just run back with him. I mean, it's a brilliant strike from Robertson. It's unlucky for Martinez, and it's an incredible reaction from Salah. But Nakamba has to cut that out a lot earlier. And even the build-up to that, it looks okay from Liverpool, but it's so slow from the Villa midfield.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, Milner, Wijnaldum and Fabinho is an incredible midfield. And they're even better when your midfield is doing nothing in defence and playing unbelievably sloppily on the ball. I mean, if you're going to be outrun, outfought by players that are better than you at football, then you are fucked. Yeah. I mean, Nakamba and Dougie were so deep. They never pressured the ball. They let people run off their shoulders all day. And when they got the ball, it was the same energy. There was no intensity. They were kicking the ball behind players or drilling it past them straight out of play. I don't think they could have been worse.
It was the reverse of Liverpool against Real Madrid. Like, that lack of intensity, lack of pressing in midfield. And when they had the ball, yeah, just losing it very quickly. And this was Villa tonight, and Liverpool were the benefactors of it. Let's get into WhatsApp whinges.
This is Paul McGrath. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
First one. Straighten your fucking arse up and just take a normal touch of the ball.
Oh my God. I think everybody listening to this knows who you're talking about. But I actually felt a little bit bad for him on the one I assume you're talking about, where Fabinho looked like he was pulling him. But it was pathetic. I mean, the ball is so far away from John McGinn and he's still trying to arse Fabinho out of the way. Yeah. Just go and run towards the ball. I mean, it worked out okay for him in the first couple of minutes down in the corner. And then he tried another one just before this incident with Fabinho that was just, oh, John, learn your fucking lesson. You can't play football with your arse. Use your fucking feet.
There was another time where he was running across, finding good positions, and there was nobody behind him. and he's just expecting somebody to be, maybe that's good that somebody's expecting and he's trying to set his body in case, but because of that he doesn't get a proper touch. Like McGinn setting his body means he's sticking his arse out and hunching his torso parallel with the ground, and then the ball just gets trapped underneath him and he flicks it back out to a Liverpool player. Like, you know, it was there just to take a touch and turn, and Villa were singing. Yeah. And it was just annoying because Villa had a good start to the first 10 minutes and they looked zippy, and that looked like a clear tactic. Like, you know, we'll win the ball back, we'll move fast, we'll find McGinn in there. And he was in there, but then when he got it a couple of times, he balls it up.
Yeah, and it's particularly annoying because you think, based on tonight or this afternoon, that he would have known that no one was behind him since he's playing with fucking Dougie and the Campbell all game. He should be used to that. But there was a couple as well where, because he's so hunched over the ball, he can't get it out of his feet quick enough. And then he can't play the pass, or he can't have the shot, or it's just, he's just, his body shape's all over the place. He's, yeah, he needs to sort his head out. And he did look good in the first couple of minutes, and I did feel sorry for him because he was doing a lot of running tonight, covering for other people who we've already mentioned.
Yeah. Oh, like, I don't want to get too down on him. Like, I didn't think he was that bad. I thought he was probably more exciting than he was bad, but that was just a particularly annoying thing early on. Second WhatsApp whinge. How the fuck is Traore still on the pitch? Honestly, like, this was after 61 minutes I wrote that down, and he stayed on for another 7 minutes. It was only because he was forced to come off, he was injured, that he got brought off.
I have to assume that injury was, he was faking it, he wanted to come off. He also couldn't believe that he was on the pitch, yeah. So he had to just go down injured. I mean, Robertson ran past him and Traore grabs his ribs. It was unbelievable. There was three instances in the first half where he tries a volleyed flick, Cruyff turn, to no one. There's nobody there. Don't know what he's doing. He plays a through ball straight out of play and 20 yards from the nearest Villa player. And then he tries that crossfield ball. That is so bad. Not only does he kick it straight to Salah, but target's not even where Traore is assuming he is.
Yeah.
I mean, if Salah didn't intercept that, it was going straight out for a Liverpool throw-in. So ignoring the fact that how dangerous it is, how difficult a task it is, and how you shouldn't do those two things together, it was fucking pointless. The player he was playing it to wasn't there.
Mm.
And Jamie Carragher shouts out, what was that? I'll tell you what that was. It was Bertrand fucking Traore. That's what he does, Jamie.
He didn't even look. Like, that's the thing. He didn't even look to see who was there. Like, never mind Liverpool players. Like you say, target had sort of come in field, and he wasn't where Bertrand Traore was presumably hoping he was, but just have a look before you decide. Like, I'm going to take this risk. Like, never take that risk, obviously, is the first point. But have a look. And, like, there was a piece of commentary. You mentioned one of the flicks. There was another one, like, not long after that. And the piece of commentary could honestly be applied to every single match. It said, and I quote, Traore with a flick, which ends up giving possession away. I was like, yeah, like, just tried another flick. Didn't care what the outcome was. And unfortunately for us, the outcome was yet again giving possession away.
That's our Bertrand Traore.
We got a tweet at the Villa podcast from Finn Ryder, who said, extra cheese, sauce, beef, bacon, and nothing healthy on that burger today. Obviously talking about the Bertie T burger, but I would go one further. I would say the only thing this meal was consistent of today was a bowl of cheese and sauce and oil and some bits of fat. I don't think there was any eating in that burger at all. There was nothing enjoyable about it. It was just danger for cholesterol and for your taste buds.
Yeah, it was a bacon offcut, just fried in butter, and then served with a full block of cheddar in between a all butter brioche bun.
Well, that does make it sound a bit better, the brioche bun.
Like, yeah, Bertrand Traore is a heart attack waiting to happen, much like that burger.
And Lewis Newman also said it wasn't a burger this week, it was a fillet of fish between the two buns, the brioche buns. The third WhatsApp whinge, I actually changed this. I changed this because I had written it about Trezeguet, and then I doubled down on it about Traore. And then when he came on, it changed my mind. So it was, just get El Ghazi on. I scored out the just get and on, and I've written El Ghazi is the worst player in the air of all time.
I mean, you've talked about how bad he is in the air a few times, but nothing could have prepared us for that header at the end. That was pathetic.
Did he even connect with his head?
Sorry, I don't know why I called it a header. Yeah, for that shoulder at the end, it was unbelievable. And it was the big moment as well. It was the 92nd minute. We got a ball into the box. We got a man free. We got him isolated with their diminutive fullback. And that's what gets produced at the end of it.
Can someone actually try to find me a clip where El Ghazi does connect with a ball with his head? Like, think about the one time he has allegedly scored with his head an amazing important goal at Wembley in the playoff final. He backs it in. His head misses the ball and hits off the top of his back, bottom of his neck, and it goes in. Like, he actually, it's not even that he's bad in the air, which he's terrible in the air. He can't judge the time. He's not aggressive. He's not strong in the air, considering how strong he is. He actually just, I don't know what it is. Is it a perception thing? He can't get his head to hit the ball. He always misses it, and that was another example.
Yeah, he's a fucking cunt.
The last WhatsApp whinge. Oh, fuck off, Southgate, with your fucking hat. They had done so well to not show him. Somebody mentioned it, and I thought, oh, here we go. And they didn't show him. The director just thought, nah, I'm not giving this guy the satisfaction. But of course, they had to show him when Trent scored. And there he is with his little Peaky Blinders hat and face mask and just annoying me again.
Yeah, just annoying me as much as you bringing him up annoys me. I mean, yeah. I mean, we've talked about it before. And maybe the Sky producers have been listening, and hopefully they'll listen about Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher being given United and Liverpool games respectively. But they didn't keep the camera on him. I mean, they had a lot to do during that 2 minutes of silence at the start of the game, and they had it on him for about 30 seconds during that. But they did wait until Trent Alexander had his moment. But you just know they were pathetically waiting for Trent Alexander-Arnold to do something decisive, either in a defensive cock-up way or by scoring a goal. That's what they were waiting for, and they had the camera poised and ready to go on Gareth Southgate. Grow up. Let's just watch the fucking football match.
And the same can be said, like you mentioned, with Jamie Carragher, because he was ready and poised for Trent to do anything. It's like the, obviously to a lesser extent, the Kane argument. Like, we don't need to pretend that he's doing something good. And Trent would just fizz the ball into a midfielder. And actually, the producers and the director obliged in showing replays of these just normal passes from a right back to a midfielder, because Carragher said, Trent again, this is what he does so well. It's like, well, it's what he does to start moves off. Like, he does other things on top of this.
But like, you don't have to double down on this. Let's just see what Trent Alexander turns out to be like. I mean, all the signs we have is he's going to be incredible. You don't need to pretend he's incredible. It'll happen or it won't. He's not your son, Jamie. Just let it happen. And if he's shit, just say he's shit. I mean, it's okay. No one's going to blame you. But like, what, the goal's incredible. I mean, what is the point of signing an incredible goalkeeper? And what is the point of that goalkeeper making an incredible save?
Yeah.
If the ball is just going to fall to that little bollocks and he's just going to do that. I mean, the power, the swerve, the accuracy of the shot is just too much for anybody to be able to generate. It's incredible. And there's nothing Martinez can do about it. And that just proves my point all the more. You don't have to talk about just rudimentary passes that Trent Alexander is playing, because he might just do that at the fucking end. And you don't have to talk all that nonsense about normal things that he's doing.
Well, let's get into handing out some awards.
Mike Ashley has turned Newcastle into a discount sports company and appointed a discounted bargain basket manager. Glenn Roeder, Kenny Dalglish, Sam Allardyce and Steve Bruce. What a fucking parade of cavemen. Like, that is the only reason Andy Carroll is a professional footballer.
Only Steve Bruce and Neil Warnock have got promoted more times than Mick McCarthy. That's not even a good stat, because the good managers kept their teams up.
having them progress their careers. Dean Smith will never get another team promoted from the championship because he won't be there. Brendan Rodgers won't get another team promoted from the championship because he won't be there.
Pep Guardiola once again reveals himself to be a cunt. Do me a fucking favour, as if Jack Grealish needs to go play under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to progress his career. That is absolutely a step backwards.
Put this on record, United won't be within 10 points of the title. I genuinely believe that. I'm not even trying to exaggerate, it's not hyperbole. 3-4 games of bad run, United are out of the title race. Like that, and that will happen to them, that will definitely happen.
What gets Sean Dyche out of bed in the morning? Like, how does he do it? Imagine how exciting a job that would be. Imagine coming home and saying to your partner, I got a new job! I'm a football manager! And then going out and doing that with it? What a waste of time! Steve Bruce is a graying pair of Slazenger socks in the basket by the checkout that nobody wants.
You let Glenn Whelan take a 90th minute penalty award? I mean, where to start here? Having to be forced into taking off Bertrand Traoré 67 minutes into the game. Like, that could have been leaving Bertrand Traoré on for 67 minutes, but it's worse because he had to be forced to take him off through injury. We talked about him there. We can mention him again if you want in a second. But the first one I want to chat about is the second nomination. Not going through the middle. Over and over and over. Like, never mind only doing it once and getting a goal because of it, but just not pounding Liverpool where they have been obviously so weak all season long. And right now, like, their axis, their three player axis is shaky as fuck. And Villa didn't go after it. And the one time they went after it, they get a handy ball from McGinn to Watkins, who has all the space in the world. Because they're just so indecisive and unsure of themselves in there. And then it's not a good finish from Watkins, and Alisson makes a blunder and it goes underneath him. And we didn't try that. It's just so often we didn't go after it. And I think that's a, even at halftime, not to say, get after him through that middle. Like, that's where they're hurt. Like, don't freak out. You'll have space and time. Do it. It's just all wrong that Villa didn't hound them in that area.
Yeah, it makes the Ross Barkley decision all the more baffling, or the leaving on Traoré decision all the more baffling. I mean, Keenan Davis was begging to be brought on into that game. I mean, Liverpool were there to be got at. The goal, it was dreadful from Alisson. I mean, an amazing goalkeeper who's having an absolutely torrid season. Far too many mistakes. But months and months of John McGinn pretending he was being serious with those ridiculous wound up speculative 40 yard spanks was all leading to this moment. The moment where he would trick Ozan Kabak into thinking he was shooting before playing the free ball. I mean, I do get the impression you don't need months of planning to deceive Ozan Kabak, but it was lovely from McGinn and a dreadful finish from Watkins.
Now that you say Ozan Kabak, I think I realize I called him Obak earlier. That's just a pet name for him, but that's what I meant. Yeah, like, yeah, it was just annoying. Liverpool are so weak there. Like, that surely should have been the game plan. But it brings me on to the third nomination. Not going after Trent over and over and over again. And I don't mean this as a slight on him, but he's just had a dreadful game against Real Madrid. His confidence is low. You could tell by the way he was roaring at the linesman and got himself a yellow card out in Madrid. Like, you know, of course he's frustrated. Like, there's a lot of talk about him. And even if that talk is overblown, like, that can help create the facts. You know, just it will eventually turn into something when there's so much chatter about it and it gets into your head. And, you know, it starts becoming a thing where he's trying to prove himself. And if Villa had just went after him, then who knows, he might have got a bit of joy, but they didn't once go after him. Like, they didn't even, well, by putting Trezeguet there for the entire game meant that they were never, ever going to go after him. But nobody tried anything to expose him in any way defensively. And I felt like that was just another route that was crying out to be explored.
Yeah, and he kicked out of Trezeguet in that game as well. And like Trent Alexander's not a brilliant one-on-one defender, so it is strange that you wouldn't try to exploit it any time you played him. I mean, you obviously have to be very careful that you don't end up putting somebody over there who's too attacking and won't bother tracking him back, because he's a brilliant attacking fullback. But it is a bit strange because there was so many different ways we could have attempted it. You know, we could have had two centre forwards on and one of them drifting more to that side of Liverpool's defence. Or you could have just, for the first time ever, tried Bertrand Traoré on the left wing.
Yeah.
Particularly because he was doing fuck all on the right wing that would make you think, well, I can't take him off there. Just move him around. That's such a simple thing to do whenever your wingers aren't firing from the start. It's just swap them around. Trezeguet can play in the right wing as well.
Yeah.
Throw Bertie T over there. Get him running at Trent Alexander. Let's see what happens. Like, you're right. He's having a stinker. He's been dropped. His confidence must be in some way shook. If you can just knock the ball past him once or twice, he might collapse. You don't know. Let's find out, though. Let's not let him work his way into the game and eventually score a screamer. Let's just test it. We might be wrong. He might be unbelievably strong mentally, but fucking find out.
Yeah. And I tell you what, moving Trezeguet over to the right would have been important because like he wasn't going to test Trent, so that was pointless. Andy Robertson started dominating in the second half, so it would have been good to have Trezeguet over there anyway. And Trezeguet could just do the same role that he does, like bring the energy, get back and help in defence and get forward again. And like Trezeguet's best trait, and I mean this in an attacking sense too, is just energy. Like he'll get into those positions, he'll get forward again, he'll make himself available. He's not always great, but he'll do that. So by putting him over to a different flank doesn't change that. And I had actually earmarked Traoré at the Fulham match to try him on the left-hand side because he was terrible against Fulham as well until the last 20 minutes or whatever it was, and that's why it sort of just went off at them because he ended up roasting two players on the right-hand side setting up the last goal, and he played a couple of lovely balls and ended up winning Villa the match too. But my big frustration with him in that game was that he never turns and takes on the fullback. So if you put him on the left where he's completely left-footed, then he's forced to face up and actually start thinking of ways of beating his man and taking defenders out of it rather than flicking it inside. And like, you know, I think I said Trezeguet was good in the final third. I think he's good in the final quarter. You know, he needs to be that far up the pitch where he's now a threat. But like outside that, he's never in a dangerous position, body shape wise and just positionally wise, to ever worry a fullback. But if you move him over onto his left where his whole body position has to change, then he could get at Trent. And like you say, just try it. It might not work, but why not try it?
Yeah, and it does do two things. You're right about that. Whenever a player has got the propensity, or sorry, just the non-stop habit of just cutting in his favourite foot, sometimes you just have to take that off them.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just running into traffic non-stop. Like, you just would not believe. Take that away from him. If you've got him on the left wing, he can't do that because he's so one-footed. He is not cutting in that right wing. And as well, playing inverted wingers tonight was probably a little bit strange because of how weak Liverpool's two centre halves are.
Yeah.
And how much a mistake their keeper has in this game. Get the ball in the wing and maybe cross it in. Let's see what happens from that aspect as well. Ollie Watkins is brilliant in the air. Toss a few in there.
We mentioned it earlier, but I think another nomination is Davis and Ramsey together. Considering how good they were against Fulham, and I know the caveat was that it's Fulham, but like, what are we using to judge players on? Like, they just did it in a game that we came from behind in the first time all season, and just the lack of game time, 10 minutes between the two of them and nothing for Davis. Just thought that's just a terrible managerial decision considering what they gave you only a few days earlier.
Yeah, I agree. And before this game, I knew Ross Barkley was going to come on. I just like I am surprised and really disappointed that Dean Smith allowed himself to be caught up in the potential narrative of Ross Barkley finding his form against his childhood rivals. And grow up. Ross Barkley's finished as a footballer, especially for Aston Villa, or at least for Aston Villa anyway. Like, it's not going to happen. These stories aren't going to, like, they're so rare, and it's so pathetic that you're trying to just generate it out of nothing. Ross Barkley wasn't going to change that game today. Don't bring him on.
And to that end, like, that is the final nomination. I know it's it sort of goes hand in hand with the Davis and Ramsey thing, but bringing Ross Barkley on just has to be the clear winner here. Like I said, I don't know how much evidence he needs to decide that it's not going to happen, but it's not going to happen. I think we can all agree on that now. And I think bringing him on, it was just a bad, bad choice. And I think that has to go down as the winner.
Absolutely, it was pathetic.
Peter Enkelman, what the fuck award. Again, take your pick. Tyrone Mings cushioning a lovely ball through for Salah, just sitting it up nicely for him. Bad miss from Salah, but only a week after a massive cock-up against Mitrovic, and he does it again, and that should have been a goal.
Since the start of the season, we have been crying about Aston Villa's ponderous playing out from the back, the needless knocking it around and rolling it back to the keeper. But when we said stop playing it back to fucking Martinez, this isn't what we meant, Tyrone. We didn't mean just miss the ball. Fucking hell, how can this be something that creeps into your game? 2 weeks in a row to misplay a back pass so badly to the opposition's best attacker. Oh my God.
Wait, what was it though? Was it a back pass? Or like, this is actually the closest you will get to a Peter Enkelman what the fuck moment. Like, it seemed like it was somewhere between taking a touch and passing it back, and he, like I say, he just cushioned it with his right foot. Like, he was taking the pace out of it so Salah could run onto it better. I honestly don't know what he was trying to do though. Was he trying to play that back to Martinez?
He was trying to play it back to Martinez on his right foot. I mean, we'll never know, because before, during and afterwards, it was just all the same thing. It was just Tyrone Mings chewing his gum and putting his thumb up. Put that fucking thumb down, sir, and start playing some fucking football.
The Bertrand Traore crossfield volley, like we mentioned, the Barkley clearance, like we made, like the Mings thing is awful, and it was the one that caused the biggest chance, so it should definitely win. But the Barkley clearance was so bad that I don't know if I want to just throw it out so quickly. And the only other nomination, and maybe the biggest potential winner, is Alisson as well.
No, let's spread the awards out. Let's give this one to Mings. Ross has already won running award there. So let's give this one to Tyrone. They all need to learn a lesson.
Yeah. Well, on that end, let's get into the Weimann meter, because going down, and you're not going to like this, and it's not really that fair, but because of the high standards that I set, I have Ezri Konsa. And I'll tell you why. It's for one moment. It's that missed header from a lovely cross from Matt Target. And I'm thinking, if I'm Ezri Konsa's manager now, I'm absolutely delighted with him. His progress is great. He's obviously better than Mings. He's Villa's best defender by a mile. He's obviously England quality. Yet again tonight, he was brilliant defensively. He needs to start adding more goals. Not even more goals, but he just needs to start putting away chances when he gets them. Like, that is a perfect ball. Whipped around the defence. He is, what, 7 metres out? In behind everyone. There's no pressure on him. And he just floats it into Alisson's hands. Just one good connection with his head there, and that's a goal. And it's a high bar, but like that's the bar that Konsa set, and he needs to start delivering there when he gets those chances.
Yeah, and this can't become a trend. I mean, your thing can't be that you miss sitters.
Yeah,
he needs to get that out of his game. And you talk about setting a high bar. Here's an equivalent bar. Alex Ferguson stopped 6'3". 14 stone of prime British beef in Rio Ferdinand from going up from corners because it was a waste of time. And Ezri Konsa is getting into that situation. I mean, what is the point of him being up there if he's just going to repeatedly miss? I think this is the fourth sitter he's missed this season. And the other thing, the other reason why Rio Ferdinand would be left back there is because he's so good in defence, but also for a counter-attack, because he's so fast and so brilliant at defending. And Ezri Konsa is also those things. So would you just leave him back? Because if he's going to keep missing, what's the point? What's the risk? What's the risk reward of playing your centre half in the opposition's box if he's just going to miss anyway?
Yeah, he just needs to be spoken to. I don't know if he has that target yet, but like, you know, you hear people like Stones talking about trying to get up to whatever amount of figures for a season. Like, somebody needs to chat to Konsa about that, because John Terry scores that. And again, I know that's a high bar, but like that's where we want Konsa to get there. And that's the tone with which the conversation should be had. Like you're excellent. Like if you want to be a top defender now, here's one definite element that you need to improve on, because not only do you need to improve on it, it's bad and it's costing us big in games at the minute. And yeah, like you say, we could have somebody else there instead. You know, we could have House clearing it as well. But like, you know, it could be a different shape up there, but like he's eating up that set piece and not doing anything with it.
Yeah, and that's the annoying thing about that header tonight from Konsa. It was so lacking in conviction. I mean, he just cushioned it back for Alisson. There was nothing in the header. It was like a back pass. It was a waste of time, and you're right, it was such a delicious ball in. The Liverpool defenders didn't know what they were doing. Alisson couldn't come for it, and it was right onto Konsa's head. Put your fucking head on it properly.
I wanted to talk about Douglas Luiz, but you've already made it clear where you stand on it. Like, don't get me wrong, I am very frustrated with Douglas Luiz tonight, but I actually wanted to ask you, like, how did you think he did overall? Like, I thought he helped bring a bit of tempo on the ball, and I thought he nicked in and won a few balls, and maybe I'm just clouded with earlier on, and he looked like he was up for it, and he looked more honest, and he was willing to try and have a bit more of an impact, which is exactly what we were demanding of him after the last match. I don't know if he brought it, but I think he did help sort of just the intensity on the ball with Villa, which wasn't often, but I don't know. I thought it was a bit of an improvement from him.
I thought he was absolutely dreadful. I think neither him nor Nakamba got the balance right of when to go. They were going in ones. They were all over the place. They didn't... How many times did a Liverpool player pick the ball up and was facing our back four? Like, yeah. We're playing two defensive midfielders. We might as well have been playing none. It was a waste of time. They were just being bypassed, and they weren't putting any pressure on high up the field to at least think, oh, well, they were trying to close it down and they didn't get there in time. I don't know what they were doing. The ball was just going past them non-stop. And then on the ball, I thought he was just giving it away.
He was giving it away a lot, yeah.
Just like regular as clockwork. It was just a ball behind the fullback who was charging on, or a ball played far too far in front of him.
I suppose maybe what I'm thinking about is that he had the ball, I don't know if he had it more often, but he had it in tighter areas more often, and he was finding other midfielders, bringing them into the game, rather than like the thing I was accusing him of after the Fulham match was taking the ball too deep and rolling it to Mings, who clears it over the top. Like that wasn't happening tonight, and I think Doggy was a bit of a reason for it. I do think he gave the ball away far too often. I agree that his positioning and Nakamba, I think he was asked to do a bit of a different role. I think he was, because Nakamba was there, asked to go and get on the ball and make something happen. No, he didn't make enough happen. I know that, but I was just a bit more excited seeing him involved a bit further up the pitch and not just dicking around the back and doing nothing. Again, we want the bar raised for him. But I think like when you're talking about positioning as well, Nakamba's supposed to be a holding midfielder. You see when Villa are in attack, his position is awful. Just watch for, they were down the right corner early on in this game, and Nakamba's at the edge of the box, the edge of the Liverpool box. And once Liverpool cut it out, there's no anchor there stopping that from doing anything. And you wouldn't even mind if Nakamba was offering. Like, you know he's not offering anything at the edge of that box. You know he's not even going to look for it. So you have to wonder, what the fuck is he doing? Like, he's just leaving these big gaps for a player who seemingly only wants to just try and win the ball back. It's bizarre that he abdicates that when Villa are attacking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Nakamba's position is dreadful, and he does drift up with the play, which is an odd trait for somebody who is supposed to be, like you say, a holding midfielder, but also somebody who doesn't want the ball. Nakamba had the ball in space twice tonight and just kicked it away.
Kicks it away.
Because a Liverpool player kind of closed him down, or started to close him down, but he still had a good second of time before he had to, you know, resort to hacking it away. But he just hacked it away. The start of both the first and the second half, just lumped it out of play for a throw-in.
I've got two players going up. Emi Martinez is one, and the other is Matt Target. We talked a lot, very positively, over the last definitely at least half of the season now about Matt Target. He's been excellent. But Is he becoming fast? He looked sharp across the ground today, and not even in a. He's been mentally sharp, and he's been tuned in and making the right decisions and having the right, yeah, the right positioning. But he looked fast across the ground, like he was giving himself a head start in that. But he was the one that was stopping Salah, you know, having those fast breaks. It was Target who was in behind him all the time, and he didn't look lacking for pace.
He's definitely gotten faster, but he's definitely not fast. His positional play is absolutely excellent, and his reactions and sense of what's about to come has gone up to such a degree that he's now just a brilliant, brilliant fullback. I mean, he's absolutely incredible in a defensive situation. And like I said, whenever he started turning the tide for himself and turned what was undoubtedly one of the worst seasons anybody was ever having since I started supporting Villa. I mean, he was dreadful the first 10, 15 games of the season. And he has turned it around. But he turned it around by being decisive. Like, whatever he does, the move is ending, both in an offensive and a defensive situation. I mean, he's either cleaning the player out or he's, you know, winning the ball back. He's just being so decisive in it. It's the ball is never... Both the ball and the player aren't going past him.
Yeah.
And in an attacking sense, he's just being so decisive as well, because he's just whipping the ball into the box every time he gets it. Like, he's gone on to another level, and he'll be in the running for the Villa Player of the Season, because, you know, whenever bad performances are overcome by good performances, nobody... Well, it's the end of the season that people care about. You know, whoever wins the Champions League gets the Ballon d'Or. Doesn't matter how bad they were before Christmas. It's what happens after Christmas that people remember whenever they're voting.
Yeah.
And Matt Target has been so good since Christmas that he's definitely going to be competing for the player of the season.
Yeah, and it's not even one of those ones, like, you are right, but I wouldn't even be annoyed if he won it, because he has been one of the better players, you know, since he's turned it around, and he deserves more credit for turning it around so much, not even just stopping himself being bad. He's become one of the better players, and it brings me on to Matt Cash. So... I haven't gone down on the Vimen meter, and, like, you know, I love Matt Cash, but he's not impacting games going forward. Like, I was going to say at all. I know he whipped that ball in, and it's unfair because if El Ghazi just puts the header away, then he's got an assist to his name. But that makes me more annoyed at how little he's been given Aston Villa going forward. Like, it's talking about wanting to bring your game onto the next level. So Cash is excellent defensively. And, you know, he's fine when we're trying to move the ball out. But he's not delivering anything. He's not a threat. He doesn't, like, if we talk about the amount of class right backs in England have, the Cash can be as good as him, but he needs to start going forward for one, and then doing something when he does go forward. And I know it's not easy with Bertrand Traoré in front of him. I actually think that's a big hindrance, because it is very hard for the fullback to get forward when your right winger is either just flicking the ball away first time or coming inside 50 meters first time, like, you know, and flying across the pitch into the centre. So it does ruin Cash's ability to have an effect on games in an offensive point of view. But I still want to see more. He still has those opportunities like he had with El Ghazi. Like, that just makes me think he needs to be doing that more. He's got a good right foot. Like, let's start like moving your game on to the next level.
Yeah, I think the thing that irks me most about Matt Cash is that he makes bad decisions whenever he is galloping forward. I mean, he gives it to the winger or inside to the forward or back in, further back to the midfielder at the wrong time. Whenever he's got space to run into, he should be carrying it more himself. And he never gives himself the opportunity to then get on to the end of a return past him, because he's just giving the ball to somebody who's in too tight a position and they can't get it back and the move breaks down. A lot of Villa's play breaks down when it's on the right. Now, that's commonly to do with Traoré, but a lot of it's just because Matt Cash hasn't just gone. He hasn't just taken the decision himself. He's given it to the player far too early and often in the wrong position.
And I think, again, it was more stand out tonight because, like, Andy Robertson and Trent basically won that game for Liverpool. And I know that they're, you know, a level above at the minute, but I don't see why Cash shouldn't be aspiring to that level. And it does show how important fullbacks can be. It's not just defensively. Like, you can change the game, especially, and I don't want to get into it, like, especially when Grealish is out. Like, we need this coming up from other players, and the fullbacks are important players in an attack. And I just don't want him coasting and not getting involved.
Well, your fullbacks are incredibly important. Leaving aside the fact that our wingers are bad and incredibly inconsistent, but your fullbacks are incredibly important whenever you're playing inverted wingers. If you're going to persist with Bertrand Traoré on the right wing, then Matty Cash has to go past him non-stop. He can't just be hanging back. Even the shot he took tonight, he takes that about 10 yards too early.
Yeah.
Like, he's got so much time to earn, so much space to run into there, and he just drills it. Just keep going. Like, definitely have the shot, but you've got loads of time before you have to take that shot. You're not going to scream one past Alisson from 40 yards. I don't care how bad a season he's having.
Yeah.
Take it in. Give yourself a chance.
And that's probably where then as well he needs to be having a conversation, and obviously the management team, with the midfield. Like the, you know, the reason Robertson and Trent are so good for Liverpool is because they're protected usually by a great midfield, by Milner and by Fabinho and by Henderson. Like, you know, how often does Henderson just close down that right wing when Trent is caught out? The rare times that he's caught out going forward, like, the idea is not to lose the ball up there. So that shouldn't happen all the time, but when it does happen, then, like, that's why you're playing Douglas Luiz, and that's why you're playing Nakamba to stop that happening. And don't worry, Matt Target's back there. He'll look after it.
Well, like, yeah, if your midfield three is Douglas Luiz, Nakamba, and John McGinn, and your fullbacks don't feel like they can go forward,
yeah,
then don't fucking play that midfield.
Yeah, that's a good point. Questions we can't answer, but probably will. Was that the biggest overreaction of all time from Jamie Carragher to a very simple touch from Roberto Firmino in the middle of the pitch, under no pressure, and the touch wasn't even that good? It bounced up for him.
It's unbelievable. It's so pathetic, and it comes back to the thing I was saying at the start. Let's get him off fucking Liverpool games.
Yeah.
Like, he was desperate tonight to point out that Bobby was playing well. Like, grow up. He's not playing well. The fucking state of that finish. But that touch was just... Like, I know Jamie Carragher was a clumsy centre half, but he was a professional footballer. He could kill a ball under no pressure in the middle of the pitch that only went about 20 foot into the air. And he could kill it cleaner than that. The ball bounced away from Firmino. Like, it's not a good touch. Not only, even if he kills that dead, it wasn't remarkable, but he doesn't even kill it dead.
I genuinely thought I missed something, because we've heard it before from him, but he had that, and he kept talking about it as the game was going on. And then I was like, right, they're going to show a replay of this. And they did. And I was like, right, there's nobody around him. So, I, you know, now I know that he hasn't flicked it through somebody's legs or, you know, done something incredible with a player hanging off him. And I thought, maybe it's something to do with whatever way he kicked it with his foot. And he literally just tries to take a touch with the top of his foot with a ball coming down. And he does it ineffectively. And honestly, like, talk about a piece of overreaction from a biased co-commentator.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, I was actually desperately waiting for the replay, because I assumed I assumed he caught it with the top of his foot and rolled it through his own legs. That was the only thing I could think of that he must have done. But no, he tried to take a good touch and fucked it up.
How unreasonable is it to start having doubts about Dean Smith?
Incredibly unreasonable.
You think so?
Absolutely. I mean, like, Villa's squad's not there. I mean, Villa's squad is definitely a mid, even with Jack Grealish, is a mid-table squad. And, like, squads will always find you out. Managers are limited by their squad. They can get the best out of them, but they can't get more out of them. You know, players are who they are. Bad managers don't make the best of their players. Good managers do. And I think it's fair to say that Dean Smith is getting the best out of this incredibly average crop of, what does he have, 14 players, and the duel is gone. It's unbelievably difficult. Like, we're playing Liverpool tonight. Like, let's not overreact here. We got beaten by the champions, who were six games at home having not won. They were always going to have some sort of a reaction tonight. I look at Liverpool's midfield that was apparently decimated tonight. It was fucking Fabinho, Wijnaldum, and James Milner. They brought on Thiago. Liverpool are incredible.
Yeah. But overall, like, there's just too many decisions that Dean Smith is making over and over that's affecting Villa's results, I think. And again, I know overall that it's going to be positive. We're going to stay up, but we've got 44 points now, and I would be surprised if we get over 50 points. There's eight games left, and against tough opposition. We have to play Everton twice, we have to play City, we have to play Chelsea, we have to play United. You know, it's going to be a tough running. Leeds will finish ahead of Villa this season. I don't know if Leeds have a better squad than Villa, and all I'm seeing is some of the same mistakes over and over. And like you say, he's only got 14 players. Like, that's true, but in Smith's head, and this isn't a good thing regardless of the squad he has, in Smith's head, he has 10 players. He has to play another one to fill out the team. And then sometimes he has to make subs, but he will only make them when he absolutely has to. And like I say, I don't know what evidence he needs with Ross Barkley to decide that he is not one of his 14 players. I don't know how much more evidence he needs from Keenan Davis from the last game to this game to decide I'm not going to play him at all. There's just these little things, and we've mentioned it before, like just the lack of flexibility and changing things up when you need to change it, and yeah, not changing things when Grealish is going to be missing for what will be close to half of the season by the time the season's over, and not doing anything about that either. I'm pro Dean Smith for the most part, but I think there's a lot of learnings, and I have a bit more sympathy for the fans who maybe push that panic button a bit more often.
I can't stand over the Ross Barkley decision. Stop throwing that back in my face. But let's get real about some of the other things you said there. He thinks he's got 10 because he doesn't have any players. Like Keenan Davis. Yeah, he did well the last game. Keenan Davis hasn't scored in the Premier League. He's a centre forward who hasn't scored in 50 appearances or whatever it is. And finishing between 9th and 14th is irrelevant. Who cares where you finish in that group? It's whether or not you're doing better. Like, Villa were never going to finish ahead of Man City, Man United, Leicester, Chelsea, Liverpool, Spurs, or Everton. Like, Arsenal have surprised even me, who had no prospect of Arsenal doing well. I thought they would be finishing 9th. And West Ham have surprised me, they're doing better than I thought they would. But like, they were never going to finish any higher than the 9th position. So finishing between 9th and 14th is irrelevant. The 6 below them are absolutely shit. So there's no big great achievement for me finishing saying Villa would finish between 9th and 14th. That was nailed on. And it was nailed on by the players that Aston Villa have available to them. Villa need to buy 3 attacking players, and they need to buy a centre midfielder. Like, attackers are so important. And when you have absolutely no idea what you're going to get from El Ghazi, Bertrand Traore, or Trezeguet game to game, then you're really, really hamstrung.
I suppose that's part of it as well. It's just how bad the performances have been. I think it would be easier to take if they were playing better. Like, actually, saying that last year, like Villa were very good last year. Remember at the start, first half of last year? And they kept losing out. They were often ahead, and mistakes would cost them, and they would lose so many points from winning positions. And yeah, obviously Smith and his team deserve credit because they're one of the best at that now, by not losing points. But they were playing well. You know, there was, like, we talk about Dean Smith's tricky villains and Dean Smith being a progressive, entertaining manager. I just don't know. Like, I was trying to cry a result out of it. I was trying to jinx it by texting so many Liverpool fans and telling them not to worry about this match. But I was being serious as well. I had to say to all of them, like, you do not understand just how bad Villa have been. You haven't watched them. Do not worry about this match. You are getting the win. Didn't think it would be that tough for them, but it was only tough because Liverpool kept missing chances. I like, since January, Villa have been terrible. Got the odd result here and there, but for the most part, they've just... even those results, they were bad, and I think that's probably what I'm thinking about when I talk about overall. Like, again, there's an overarching part of that overall where Villa are on course in the grand scheme of things. But if you go from that macro level into just a little bit more, not micro, but just a little bit of a smaller bubble, where in general it's not good what we're seeing, and I expect more from a Dean Smith coach side.
Yeah, like, and don't get it, like, yeah, whatever. Like, yeah, it's better than last season. Who gives a fuck? It's really fucking annoying how shit we are now. But it's only really annoying in the context of how good we were at the start of this year as well.
Yeah.
And you say we were good last year, like, we, you know, we were dominating games and stuff. But that was only for about 10 games at the start of last season as well.
Yeah.
We were fucking dreadful last year. Like, after lockdown, Dean Smith had to turn into the most boring manager in the country to keep us up. We were shite. We were dreadful. The players were shit then, and they're still shit now. We've just managed to make an improvement in some positions, but we still have a lot of improvement to make. Villa were always going to be a mid-table team this season, and it was always just about whether or not that would be enough to keep Jack Grealish, and then we can take the next step next year. You need successive cycles of improving, and you have to be improving, and we're definitely improving. But yeah, it's fucking terrible how terrible we've been. Like, losing to Sheffield United, drawing with Newcastle, and was it Wolves as well? That three-game run was just turgid. It was unbelievably difficult to watch. I think we followed that up with a defeat to Spurs, when we couldn't have been worse.
Mm.
Like, it's been really, really fucking hard to take, because we've been so fucking shit. And that needs to be called out, and there does need to be questions there, but I think the questions are largely answered by how shit a lot of our attackers are.
And just finally, where does Ross Barkley go next?
Who cares?
Because I was thinking about if we went back 10 years ago, the logical move for him is QPR, who would just overspend on an overrated player, or Sunderland. But those clubs aren't around anymore. Like, you know, even Sheffield United seemed to be the last of them, like, when they got caught with Ryan Brewster. You're thinking, this guy's coming from a big club, let's spend a bit of money on him. I just don't know how much players are going to do that. Like, Newcastle, actually, it's probably Newcastle, that's where he ends up, right?
Yeah, almost certainly. And Ross Barkley has taught me a lesson. It's like, you never, ever buy a player who's on a downward trajectory. Like, it isn't going to work out. Ross Barkley had been shit to average for Chelsea for the last 2 years. You know, Sanchez had been shit for Arsenal for a year. Eriksen had down tools for Spurs for a year. Whenever a player who everybody considers has already made it, whenever that player is a name and they're no longer good, they're not getting any fucking better. Yeah. Forget about it.
And that's putting me off Dele Alli now as well. It's like, you know, the standard of football at this level is too high. Like, you can't take a year off of pissing about. You're going to get caught out. We've seen it over and over. I was sort of thinking about Lingard. He didn't take a year off, in fairness to him. He just wasn't making the United team. And now he's doing really well at West Ham. Like, you know, like, that's, he's probably level a little bit up just above that. But he's just not good enough for United. He's not on a downward trajectory.
Yeah, he wasn't good enough for United, but he was still trying his fucking socks off. Like, anytime you saw Jesse Lingard, he was still running himself into the ground. He was still trying to be good, but he isn't good enough for a club the size of Manchester United, and that was affecting his head as well.
Yeah.
And the Man United fans were ruthless with him as well, because he was so ineffective in games. And that's obviously going to affect him. He just needed a fresh start. Ross Barkley needs to retire.
And that's it for another grim podcast, another glum day. And to make it worse, we've got Man City next year coming off the back of a defeat. So they're not going to have that bench that they had today. They'll just have a bench probably equally as expensive. But they'll have all the big guns out, and they'll make sure to hammer Villa into the ground to make sure it doesn't happen again. And that's something we've all got to look forward to. So we'll see you then. If you want to stick around for it, maybe just wait for the game after that, when we might hear about Jack Grealish almost being back. See you soon.